Welkom bij de podcast Expat to Repat, je weer thuis voelen in Nederland, waarin ik, Mirjam de Bakker, jou aan de hand van mijn eigen ervaringen en de verhalen van andere repats meeneem in hoe het is om weer terug te verhuizen naar je thuisland, zodat jouw terug naar Nederland reis sneller en fijner verloopt dan de mijne.
Dear listeners, welcome to another episode of Expat to Repat. Feeling at home in the Netherlands, whether you're new to this country, whether you're thinking of moving. Today we're going to do a version in English. Today in the podcast, I'm very happy to welcome Mimsa. Mimsa Wever is a coach and trainer focusing in emotional intelligence and transitions. And she works mainly with expats and internationals. Now, the reason I have Mimsa in the podcast today will be clear in a few moments, but it's because she's not your typical repat or expat, which makes her very, very interesting. So first of all, welcome in the podcast, Mimsa.
Thank you, Mirjam. Thank you, Mirjam. It's good to be here. Thank you for this space you offer. I've listened to your podcast a couple of times and I had a couple of laughs and nodding. It's like, oh yeah, I get that.
Yeah. A lot of like, oh yeah, yeah.
Like aha moments. Well, I had the one, I could totally be there coming to the Netherlands as a child every vacation and running to the Hema and having a Hema worst.
Yeah.
And having.
Why do we do that?
I don't know, but I loved it. I really looked forward to it. And then it was a feeling at home or having a stroopwafel, feeling at, you know, the Dutch grounds and touching ground. So I loved it. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really happy that you're here, that we managed to find a time and place where we both had some time to actually record this podcast. Yeah, you know what, with the Hema, it's the funny thing is, it's the first and only like Dutch brand everyone talks about when we live abroad. But here in the Netherlands, I rarely go to the Hema. It's not something I do every single day, but it's the one thing when you're abroad, then you suddenly like, I crave something typical Dutch. And that's when you talk about the Hema. So it's a very interesting concept, right?
Exactly. Yes. Well, I still go to the Hema. So I hope it's there. And but I don't eat the Hema worst anymore for health reasons and just making sure I maintain myself. But yeah, it's that way.
Yeah. No, I understand. So let's dive a little bit into your story to explain, I guess, to give some context to why I think you're a special type of expat, repat, local, international, all wrapped up in one. So will you take us back to, well, the very beginning? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I begin with my roots. It makes it clear for people because when people see me, they're puzzled. Okay, you're Dutch, but how Dutch? Where is it? So it gives context to people, and also because I'm very proud of where I come from. My dad was half Dutch, half Indonesian, and he went in his adult young years, went as a volunteer to Bolivia and met my mom in Bolivia, and they got married, moved to the Netherlands, and my sister and I were born. Years later, we moved to Kenya for my dad's job, and there was my brother born. So we're three siblings. Okay. And so, yes, we've traveled a lot for my dad's work, but we also stayed a lot. So my parents tried to stay in Bolivia to have a base. So every time my dad would have a chance to extend his contract in Bolivia, he would do that. And we went also back and forth in Netherlands and Bolivia.
Yeah, so that's a lot of cultures. And I think it's a beautiful mix, very unique. Were you raised in one culture? Like when you were in Bolivia, was the emphasis on one culture, on one language? Or were you raised by a trilingual?
I wish. My dad didn't speak his language anymore. He moved to, he came to the Netherlands very, very young. So his mother tongue was Dutch. Because we lived in Bolivia and my father spoke perfect Spanish, we spoke Spanish at home. So it was only one language. About the culture, I think it was mixed. We got the Dutch and the Bolivian culture. Because of the concerts we were in, the Bolivian culture, Spanish, it was more on the foreground. And about the Indonesian culture, it was in the food. My dad could cook very well Indonesian food. So that's how we got the Indonesian part. When I learned a little bit more about the story and the history about how Indonesia, the relationships with the Dutch and so forth, where I understood why a lot of people don't speak about it. So why I didn't grow up with that part. I like to believe that my dad sort of said, okay, you know, I'm not going to go into the negative. I'm going to move forward. And that it just gives us a lot of space and emotional space in that aspect.
And he still gave it to you through his food.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. So his love and passion for the food, he gave us that culture part. But the hardships, he left it at where he was. So it didn't move on to us. I believe in the generational passing on of good things and also the hardships from one generation to another. And in my case, I'd like to say, I don't feel any of that. You grow up with it. Somehow it's there. So I'm happy I learned later on as an adult about these things.
Yeah.
But he never talked about those things himself.
No, that's a common theme, I think. Yeah.
And I didn't know until I heard from other people. And that was actually also nice to give him, to see him in that part. Yeah, as a person, as a child, probably. Yeah. So it humanized him more for me and not just, you know, dad who does this or that and is your hero or makes mistakes, all these things. So yeah. And so that's how we grew up, and we went back and forth. Our average time in one place was 3 years, either a city in the same country or another country. So I lived in about 12 cities in my life between Bolivia, the Netherlands, Kenya, and I was shortly in the UK myself. And that formed who I am. And I thought that was normal. So I repatriated a couple of times to the Netherlands as a child and then as a grown woman. So that was also interesting.
Oh, yes. You're definitely a third culture kid.
Yeah.
Most definitely. Yeah. No, I recognize the feeling of it's normal. How is, because for me, it's always a nice topic to hear from other third culture kids. Do you have roots? Because myself, somebody else gave me a very nice description the other day. I'm like a water plant. So I do have roots, but they're tiny. They're quite long. You can like plant me anywhere and I'll grow quite quickly. But you can also take me out real fast. I don't have very thick, strong roots and I don't need them. I don't need to be grounded that deeply. So how is that for you?
Oh, I love this question. Never thought of it, but now if I look at myself where I'm standing now, where I am, the choices I made, I would say the roots are growing, are taking the space to just take the space, because I can relate to what you say. I think that was until my 30s that the roots were short and probably resilient, and wherever you would put me, actually I would actually have this crave of, okay, what's next? Where am I going next? What's the next adventure? I couldn't go anywhere. I had no partnership. I didn't have my partner back then. I was single, no kids, no real responsibilities, life responsibilities and attachment, only myself. And that makes being an international or an expat or a repat so much easier, because the decisions you make only impact yourself.
Yeah, and you can just uproot or move.
Exactly.
Yeah, and on a whim, just because you feel like it.
Yes, and the world is your playground. So then I had that, what you say. The roots were there, and always looking for these new adventures and new cultures, experiences and maybe to develop my career or develop myself personally. And now, since I live in Eindhoven, because I live in Eindhoven already 11 years, that's the longest I've ever lived anywhere. I live in Brabant probably 15 years.
Yeah, that's a long time.
That's a long time.
That's a long time.
So I lived in a small town called Noenen, for those who don't know. That was the Van Gogh town. And I lived there for 4 years. And then I decided I can go anywhere. So the routes were short and hungry for adventure. Or I stay. I chose to stay because my background is architecture and urban design. I had studied at the university in Eindhoven. And I thought I could stay here or go. Back then, Eindhoven was totally different from what it is today. I could foresee what the changes would be and how it would just transform itself. And so far, it's more or less what I have expected that it would be. You know, as an urban designer, city-wise, and also as, you know, the people, international. So I was excited to see that in the city. I never had that chance. So my love for cities made me choose, oh, I want to see that. I want to have that adventure in the one place I'm still in. So I chose for Eindhoven.
So it was a conscious choice, actually.
It was a very
right then
conscious
and there
choice.
To
yeah.
see, you know, how rooted can I really get here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. And for me, it was, I had international friends and a few Dutch friends. But having an international network, it changes. You know this. It changes constantly. There are people coming and people going, and you're going yourself. So it's yeah. it's very dynamic. It was the first time I realized that it also becomes lonely when you're staying. Not only when you come to a new place, you get lonely because you need to start. But when you stay yourself.
Sorry that I interrupt you. But before we continue, because this is a very interesting thing, but we skipped a huge part of your journey. And I think we need, there's a little bit that we need to explore before we can go dive into this one, because I think it's important for context, because you grew up in Bolivia, Netherlands, Kenya,
different
going
places.
Back and forth. You grew up speaking Spanish.
Yeah. No Dutch.
No, exactly. That was my point. No Dutch. Yet at one point you decided to study in Eindhoven.
Yeah.
So you came here, but you did not speak Dutch. You were half Dutch. So in a way you understood the culture, but then you were half Dutch. So parts of it were definitely not in your DNA. So take us back to that time when you first landed in Eindhoven, because I think that is pivotal in a lot of choices you made at that point.
Definitely. I hadn't decided already to study in Eindhoven. My goal was to live for a couple of years in the Netherlands, learn the language, because I didn't speak it back then. I could speak it a little bit as a child, but I never kept it. I decided to stay a couple of years, learn the language. That was my aim. I will learn the language no matter what. And I was going to move forward to the UK and study there. So when I renewed my passport myself, I went to the embassy in Bolivia, the Dutch embassy in Bolivia, asked for the form, looked at it. It was in Dutch. And I said, do you happen to have this in English or Spanish? And this
That's
gentleman
weird, right?
looked at me yeah. with huge eyes. And he looks at me, he's like, for real? Are you asking you as a Dutch to have a form in another language? It's like, okay, I see your point. So that was the first confrontation of, okay, this is, I need to do this for myself. Yeah. I decided to move back to Europe. That was my dream. And my dream was also to learn the language. I only have the Dutch. I should know the language. I want this. So I came here, I was 29, decided to leave everything. It was the first time I would travel and move away from home alone across the ocean. We had traveled a lot, so I thought, easy peasy, I've got this. And I did. Only I was so naive to think, you know, I have to do all the challenges on my own. what I said, being on your own is, I had only the responsibility of my own, so it was easier, but I had to look out and see where the solutions were also on
you
my
have
own.
To create a life, and you can't do that on your alone.
Yeah, no. Yeah. So I did have a small network, people who had come here to study, or who friends from my parents. So there was a thin, but there was a network. And that's so huge for anyone moving back or moving somewhere, to have at least a start of a network. I'm going to check with your question. How did that go? So that's how it went. I was 29. My dream was to get a master in my area, architecture or urban design. And the crisis came in 2008.
Oh, I remember that. Yes, absolutely. We were
so there
in
was no work for architects. Yeah. Everything. So my plan to moving to the UK, that's how I actually lived in the UK for a couple of months, had to be turned back, had to be redesigned. And so I said, okay, I can stay in the UK in a crisis. I don't know where it's going. And I do have some savings, but it's probably not enough. Or I can go to what has been home, the Netherlands, for a year and a half. I already know a little bit of the system. So the logical thing was to come back.
No.
And that made it illogical. It felt good to come back home. And also a side note, I never had a backup plan. If things didn't work out in the Netherlands, I will go back to where my family and friends are in Bolivia. That was not an option.
No, it was time to spread your wings and make it on your own.
Yes, and I felt like this was my place. I don't know why, but when I came here, I realized, and maybe I'm moving too fast, or so you let me know, that where was my culture? Mm-hmm. When I lived in Bolivia, I always felt like a foreign, even though that's where I did most of my growing up. Mm-hmm. And when I came to the Netherlands, even though I wasn't seen as Dutch, I didn't mind that.
Okay.
Whereas in Bolivia, it kind of hurts, you know, I live here, I speak the language. I know everything. Still, I was seen as a foreign. And here I felt like, okay, I can be direct. I can be honest. I can say things bluntly. I don't have to go in the Latin way, a little bit around here. Or you don't say no there.
So there's maybe definitely Dutch in your DNA.
Oh, yeah. I always say I got more Dutchified in the year. So when I would go back in my first vacations back to my family, they would say, oh, you've changed so much. You can't say things like that here. You can't say it so bluntly. It's like, okay, you know, so I had to put my Bolivian or my Latin American filter on, and I found it so tough, because even though I understand it, even though I know the nuances, it wasn't my
coat. It's not your natural
identity anymore. No. So I felt comfortable where what I had discovered and with whom I had discovered in the Netherlands.
Yeah, that's a very valuable insight to have, that you actually identify. Sometimes you just identify more with one culture than with the other.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
And I have, in my mind, it was like, well, how could it be? You know, I've spent the most time in one culture. Assume that would be mate, because I spent so much time in it, it would be my culture more that side than the other. And I had spent so little time. It was only visits. And one time we lived for 2 years in the Netherlands. And it was a piece of me was coming back home.
Yeah, because it
resonated. I still had to build it.
Yeah, yeah.
But a piece of me was coming back home.
Well, it had to, because, you know, you've been here now for, what you say, 15 years, 18 years, a long time anyways. You don't do that, you know, if after a couple of years you feel like, okay, I really gave it a try, but it's not for me. But
yeah,
that you're still here, I think, means that, you're Dutch. Yeah.
Yeah. And going back to your, sir, about the roots and how geworteld zijn, I don't know how to say this in English. How rude are they?
Yeah.
I would say because I took a conscious decision to come from Bolivia to the Netherlands, to Europe for a start. And then after things got complicated, to say, okay, then I'm going back to the Netherlands. And that's what it is. And replan what I wanted to achieve. And I did. It made sense.
So how did you go about learning the language?
It was very lonely, the six months, the first 6 months. And I will tell you why. Because I decided not to become friends with Spanish-speaking expats or internationals, people in I first lived in The Hague and then in Amsterdam in my first stage. So it's very international there, but I decided not to speak Spanish because I knew I will start in a bubble of the Spanish speaking and become very comfortable and lazy and not learn the language. So that was one thing. Very strict with myself. And the other one was I pretended I didn't speak English. I could speak a little bit of Dutch, but it wasn't like a full conversation. I could say, you know, where's the next stop? Where can I find this? These kind of things. And then people would just start, and my pronunciation was fine. So people would just assume, oh, well, you're just Dutch. And then they would continue. And it's like, oh, man, but it, just keep going. So I just like market, bus, all these places, I would pretend I don't speak English. If I would go to the bank to back then, you could still go to the bank and open a bank account.
Oh, God, yeah.
I would say, you know, I speak English. I won't do these official things in a language I'm not good at. So I didn't do that. So I gave myself a couple of rules. And with my roommates and their friends, my new friends, I would speak English. So I allowed myself to have at least, you know, because otherwise it was very lonely. And
I was going to say, you did not make it easy for yourself.
No. But it really set me for success for what I wanted. And that was learn the language. I was back then harsh. I don't think that anymore at all. But at that point, I felt embarrassed. I was Dutch and I didn't speak it. I didn't speak the language. I thought I had an opinion about it.
Yeah, I was going to say that there was more to do with your own views.
Yes,
on
exactly. I had an opinion about it.
Yeah.
And it really supported me to learn the language. And every time I would just say, you know, okay, now I can communicate at this level. And next time it's like, I want to be able to, if something happens on the street, I could just, you know, say, hey, why are you doing this? Or I was first in the line. Can you please go to the back? These kind of things, because I didn't feel fluent in the language. I didn't dare to just come up for myself. So every time I would just go. So in a relationship, I would say, okay, next time I want to be able to express my emotions and dreams in the language. So every time I would just set this intention, and then it would come in a year or two.
Yeah, that's actually pretty amazing.
Thank you.
And you managed, because we met at the International Bites and Business Dinner in Eindhoven. And it took me a while to realize that you're Dutch, but that you weren't, you know, speaking Dutch from birth, so to say. So somebody who meets you now, there's not a a clue that you're not Dutch. I mean, your pronunciation, everything is like full on Dutch. There's no hesitation, no accent, no nothing. So I think that's wonderful. And during that time when you were learning the language, you also had to understand the culture. So you had to understand the nonverbal cues and the way people in this country like to be extremely blunt and direct and focused and blah, blah, blah. So did it change your view? Because, you know, you visited the Netherlands. What did you think of the culture as you got to know more about the Netherlands?
Well, I think, you know, I was in the Netherlands in the 80s, where there were punks on the streets, remember? And you know, a lot of graffiti. It was a very raw time. It was a different Netherlands. So for me, I had to sort of like recontext where how the new Netherlands where I was, and that was in pieces. Every time we would come, then there was, you know, it would change.
Well, let me reframe the question then, because I know you work a lot with expats and internationals, and we'll get into your work in a bit. So you understand for them how it is to be in this country and to sometimes get a few shocks here and there.
Yeah.
In the way. So what is the, like, if you take Bolivia, for example, what is the biggest difference in culture between the two?
Okay. As what comes to mind, for instance, in Bolivia, you can, in my opinion, I don't want to generalize this, in my opinion, you know, you get to know one also through who they know and which family they come from. So there's also a lot of career orientation, but the family, which family are you from? It also says a lot of who you are. So so the last name is very, it gives already a lot of information about the person. When I came here, it was not much, at least not the way I saw it, because maybe if I would know more people, more cultural things, I would have a more sense of these nuances. But for me, what standed out, it was how, what is the level or the degree of education you have that would define a person more than where they come from or where what their last name is. So in Bolivia, you do a lot. It's like what everything you do will affect you and your family and your name.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And again, in my opinion. And this probably has also changed in the past 18 years that I have been away. And in the Netherlands, it's what do you, you know, how do you make sort of like a name for yourself and your career and your achievements? That's what I felt. That was the difference what I felt. So what I remember doing to reassure myself, I would say what my career was. So I really put my identity and I hanged it from, I'm an architect. So I would sort of gain respect from people, or they would be interested. So I noticed this difference that if people knew what level of education I had achieved, then that there was,
they can
was
place
something
you,
different.
They know, you know, how to view you. The good thing is, I think, for somebody who's listening now, who is not living in the Netherlands yet, but who is thinking about moving here, it means that in this country, you can actually, you will be judged on your own person. You will not be judged on who your family is or which sometimes. But if you come from a different country, it's also an opportunity to just present yourself the way you want to be seen. You can actually put on that and that identity that suits you, because it will not affect your family directly because they're not here.
That's, I think, if when coming back and also when you're going somewhere as an expat or as an, you know, you decide to move to another country, that's what happens. Definitely, you can sort of reinvent yourself. And for me, it was liberating to, not because it was restraining, but it gave me space to go and create that, which I had been doing as a child. Every time we moved, I had this opportunity to recreate something or discover something. And it has its advantages and disadvantages, or painful moments, because, you know, you also lose friends and contacts and friendships, but it also gives opportunity to learn new things. So for those moving, yes, you definitely get the opportunity to show up in the way you want to show up.
Yeah.
And highlight what you want to highlight. I would say, though, is do highlight that because you're proud of it and not afraid how people will see you. You're trying to prove something. And that's what I did. I was trying to prove something. I was trying to say, you know, yes, I'm valuable for your company, or I'm valuable for this because I've done this, these degrees or this kind of thing. And I would also notice, you know, it's, if I would say, yeah, I studied at a technical university. Oh, so it's sort of like a surprise. Oh, okay. So I guess then you're the real thing, kind of.
Yeah.
That's what I would read in it. Maybe I'm assuming, but I thought, oh, okay. So if I say this, then I would, you know, go about it. Yeah. If I say this, then I present more value to whatever the moments require.
Yeah. No, I can see that, you know, that also comes with its own traps. in a way, because nice little bridge. Today you are not an architect. You actually reinvented yourself while living here. So can you take us into that transition?
A starting point would be that, you know, I was trying to prove something and I was trying to value myself based on what I had done, which degrees I had achieved. So I had to, I had a period of detaching myself from this belief that if I am not the architect or the urban designer or the professional, then I'm not Mimsa. And I see this a lot in people who are career oriented, you know, that's what defines us. And it, in a sense, it's beautiful because it gives purpose. But for me, I felt empty if that wasn't there. So because of the crisis, I wasn't able to find a job for whichever reason, but it gave me the opportunity to rediscover, okay, if that's not it, what then? What is it?
Yeah.
And it's not my whole value. I can reinvent it and I had to regain my value. So I did, and it was a transition of years. I worked in the event branch. I had so much fun. It was a dream when I was in my teen years to work in a hotel management branch. So somehow that dream also came true, and I realized like, oh, actually, I'm doing what I at some point thought, you know, that would be fun. So I got to do that, enjoyed my colleagues, my work, the people I work with, and then I started something. Every 3 years, so this pattern is there has to be a change. But then I realized, okay, I can't be moving every 3 years and start over. So let me do something healthy.
I have the exact same thing, you know that. Yeah. I always tell my husband, you can stay, but either the house or the job has to change.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
So every three years, something had to, but I wasn't aware of this until my 20s. I don't know, the satisfaction, the pleasure was gone, and it felt so ungrateful, but it's not. It's sort of this, I don't want to say need, this curiosity of, you know, knowing more about life and discovering new things. And I think I've heard in a couple of your podcasts about multiple people. I can't find the term anymore, where you know, you like to do a lot of things.
When you're multi-passionate or multi-talented.
Multi-passionate. Yeah. So yeah. I totally identify with that. So I gave myself, okay, every year I want to bring something new out. So I kept that fresh and that feeling of renewing something, reinventing, not necessarily a whole part of me, but something new in me. So I'm getting a little bit off track now, I think.
We were actually going through, throwing the term transition around.
Yeah.
Because we're moving on from the architect, Mimsa.
Yes.
A different Mimsa, yeah, a different part of Mimsa.
So I was, it took me about, I think, 4 years to move away from the facts. If I don't do that, then I do nothing, to enjoying having fun with colleagues and clients, to finding again a new passion. I took photography. I wanted to become a photographer. And then I thought, okay, that's not going to be. And then, but I always had this passion about people and stories, and people would just pour themselves. I would had just met them and they would just pour things out where I'm thinking, am I supposed to be knowing this? Super private, personal, and very, I can't think of the word, kvetsbar.
Vulnerable
stuff, and they would come out with that. So I thought, okay, you know, just be with it, let the person be. But so somehow it just happened, and then I realized it's not normal. It doesn't happen to everyone.
No, absolutely not.
And I'm someone who likes to ask questions, and somehow I get to that part, and where people feel safe to share. And so that's one of the ways that I discovered coaching, also through my own personal growth and trainings I did to just bring myself to the next level, that I discovered this. And I love it. It's a long transition from one thing to the other.
Because you are a transitional coach yourself and you work with expats and internationals.
Yeah.
But, you know, coach is, I think it's a wonderful profession, but there's a lot of different meanings that are given to coaching and there's a lot of different types of coaching. And I'd like you to tell a little bit more what type of coach you are, because you're not the, you're not a, like a lifestyle coach. You call yourself something different. So what type of coaching, what type of coach are you?
Yes. Thank you for that question. And I agree, there are so many shades of coaches and coaching. I would say the primary thing is I focus on emotional intelligence. It's to be there with the person who's exploring their own emotions and challenges. Like I said, people would just pour out and say things, then it's just letting it be and feeling. And emotional intelligence is letting yourself feel what there is and be. No judgment, no escaping or fast forwarding, but also not lingering. That's also emotional intelligence. Some people tend to linger. So one of the things is emotional intelligence, and where I develop myself also on. I can't say it's something that comes naturally, but I know I grow and I keep growing as a person, as a woman, and as a coach in that area. And it's one of my passions. The life I have led as a child, like you said, I'm a third culture child. I know the challenges as a child to move around and I've seen the challenges for my parents. So I know what it does to parents also. The differences there can be. Both my parents were from different cultures. So we were in different cultures and they had to come together in their own cultures. And they had never been around, only my father once, and that was it. So the whole lifestyle or the whole way of living was also a first for them.
No.
So they had to get to know each other, themselves. So it's asks a lot of a person.
So many layers.
So many
relationship
layers.
Other than, yeah.
Exactly.
The normal one.
So to go back to your question, what kind of coach am I? I work, because my life experience is there, I work with international and expats. I see a difference between one and the other. The circumstances in which you come are different. Also, I hadn't had a repat yet as a client. But I know what it feels to be going around and coming back. But I know also that every single experience is completely different from the other. So what I've lived is not the blueprint for someone else.
No,
so
but
I'm curious.
Yeah, but I do think it's very important. And that's you know, also why you're in a podcast. When you move to the Netherlands, whether you're Dutch and you have been an expat and you come back, or whether you are married to a Dutch person and together for, you know, different cultures, you come and live here, or whether you're an international and you're here for a period of time. If you find yourself struggling and you decide you want to talk to someone, to a coach, you know, to get through that and to come, you know, learn about yourself and grow and everything that comes with it, it's very important that you find a coach that you're comfortable with, but also someone who has lived that, who knows what you're talking about. Because there are amazing Dutch coaches, but if they've only lived in Holland and if they've never lived abroad, or if they're not married to someone from a different culture, a lot of the things that come with that, the emotional challenges, they have no idea.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think it's very important for people to know that there are coaches like yourself that will understand that fundamental part of the different cultures and the moving around.
Yeah, I agree. So yes, I can deal with career aspects, purpose, life purpose. There's something that comes a lot there, and grief. We underestimate the amount of grief there can be. And it doesn't necessarily only mean if somebody passes away, someone dear passes away in distance. It, you know, just the fact that you left your home is you're grieving. And so this is a topic that is very dear to me, and I handle it with a lot of care. Also, I lost my father, but he was in the Netherlands, but my sister was abroad. So, you know, it brings so many things, so many layers into the whole family system and where you're at and how you can support yourself and your family and deal with the situation. And it was a beautiful process for us. And then I realized how much impact this has in so many levels and in so many combinations. And then I learned that leaving is also grieving, because we lost something. We lost
relationships. You say goodbye to a lifestyle, to people,
a home,
to,
you know, I've heard of people just leaving
this familiar.
Yes, you know, it's you're detaching yourself from so much, knowing that you're going to so much, but you don't know what it is, and you have no guarantees.
In the work we do, you know, reverse culture shock is definitely a thing, and grieving is a very important part of acknowledging the fact that it is grief, and it's not the same grief as if somebody passes away, but you are mourning, you are saying goodbye, and you need closure on that, and you need to know what you're feeling, why you're feeling it, and how to get through it, and how to maybe add it to your skill sets, to your resilience skill set.
And also the thoughts, you know, but I'm not losing someone, we tend to make it smaller and actually not give the space that, you know, that's also, it hurts, and it's also okay. So that's the kind of coach I am. I've coached also Dutch people who probably have a affinity with international life, work, these kind of things. What I love about that side of my coaching, I don't do it on the foreground. I do it if somebody asks, you know, I'm there. If it's a good match, then I'm happy to work with them. And what I love about that part is that because I'm not the totally Dutch mindset and I have a different way to probably look at things, it gives them other insights
where
they're at. So that's an asset that I've realized as a coach for some Dutch clients I've had.
It sounds like you're well embedded in this country.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, well, it's with ups and downs. It was a beautiful process. And where I am right now is I'm enjoying it. It's challenging to be an entrepreneur, you know, starting your own practice, starting my own practice. I've never done this. So for me, it's completely new. But it makes me understand so many perspectives. There's a lot of responsibility and freedom in it. Yeah. So I decide. So what I said, you know, if I only need to decide for myself where and which direction I go, it makes me more resilient and move forward into the direction I want in the speed that I can do that. Yeah.
And as for your personal life, you are part of a family now. You're not on your own. Which cultures do you teach? Is maybe a strong word, but does everyone at home now speak Spanish as well?
We am a mom, and my partner is Dutch, and we speak Dutch, but we have a bilingual upbringing. So I speak with my child in Spanish, and my partner is learning Spanish. So that's wonderful.
I was going to say he has to, right?
I love the fact that it's a decision he made. He took it. Yes. So so it makes it. If you decide something for yourself, the motivation will always be there. And if it just dips down, then, you know, I'm there to support, but it's different. And what it's fun is that he uses the an app on the phone, and he's been doing it as long as our child is, and that's not very long. And he is now disappointed. It's like, how can this be? You know, I'm doing exact the same amount of time, and our doll is already translating and explaining, no, dad, it's not like this, it's like that. Oh, but this is the meaning of that. So it's...
Children are sponges. They're so good at picking up languages.
It's so yeah. much fun. So we have fun with that. And we spend some time in Spain to make the horizon a little bit bigger. Mm-hmm. So from my own experience, I decided I will pass on Spanish to make sure that they have the choice. They can use it. Yes. So they don't have to go through the thing that I had. So I said, okay, now I need to learn and I won't speak Spanish and I won't speak English.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's already there.
So you're equipping them with a very important tool, being able to speak multiple languages, and it will make picking up even other languages easier along the way as well.
It's just so incredible to see how it just lights up the brain, you know, when there's more than one language, that's just the brain lights up to learn so much more and to be so broad. So it makes also parenting fun.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I must say, it's a beautiful story. And I think it's nice that you were willing to share it and to inspire others that are listening in their choices when they come here or if they just moved here. And if you're listening right now, I mean, I'll give you the opportunity to mention your own website because I don't know it by heart. But if you're listening and you're moving to the Netherlands or you just moved and you're like, okay, I can use some coaching. I'd like to talk to Mimza. She is now going to share where we can find her. And I will also put everything in the show notes so you can read when you have time. And of course, as always, I'd love for you to actually subscribe to this podcast. There's a couple of more episodes in English and there will be more in the future. So over to you, Mimza. Where can people find you?
People can find me at transitional-coaching.nl. And you can also find me on LinkedIn. You just take in Mimza. Make sure you spell that with a Y and a Z. But you will see
M-Y-Z-A
Weaver. In English, Weaver, I used to say, and in Spanish, is Weber. That's well. The three ways of saying my last name. And feel free to drop me a message and ask questions if there's any concerns. I'm here to support.
Yeah, it's very easy to book a chemistry call through the website. So you can always just reach out to Mimza and, see if you're a match, because I think that's always the most important thing when you're looking for a coach. All right. Well, I'd like to thank you for your time and your input and your insights today. And I'm happy. I'm always happy that I get so many wonderful people that actually want to appear in a podcast. So we'll keep doing that. So thank you all for listening and talk to you next time.